Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Tonight, sadly, is the final part in our series Towards Belief, a new TV program and DVD series that's about to be launched on the big blockers to Christian faith, some of those big issues in our community today. I'm so impressed by so much of this, the issues they take on head on, their way of dealing with them, the experts they've gone around the world to talk to about it, to say nothing of some really high production values, which is so encouraging to see. To wrap up our series, we look at two final issues with Carl Faes, the presenter of Towards Belief. Isn't the church obsolete, outdated, irrelevant? That's the first issue. And secondly, what about taking that big step of faith? How does it happen? And what happens? If you have your own question you want to fire at Carl, give us a call on 1300 40 20 20 for the final time in this series. Carl Faes, welcome back.
Lee, it's great to be here.
Great
wonderful
to see you,
be with you.
Good on you. So the first question, it is probably a hard question to ask a church minister such as yourself, but there is a widespread perception and some kind of substance to it that the church is part of yesteryear. All the stats say the church is dying in the West.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because certainly if you go back to, say, the 1950s in America and in Australia, there's been a huge drop-off in the number of people that go to church. Now, one of the questions is, so did those who go to the church in the 50s and 60s actually believe what they were doing, or were they actually just part of this was social norm?
Good point. I'll take my parents, for instance. They sent each of us from the age of five faithfully onto Sunday school. They didn't have, nor still have, anything to do with Christian faith.
And I think that the next generation, you know, kind of the shift from your parents to you, it was a shift where that next generation, because of a whole bunch of shifts, major changes in the community, social values of the community of the West, was, we're not going to do this anymore if we don't believe it. So while there was a reduction in church membership and commitment and contact, there was also, what we've got is far, far less nominalism, but that's what you still have in the US. But when I say the church isn't dying now, I think that the decline has flattened. And what we'll talk about is the fact in a number of places in the West, certainly London, big places like London and New York, there's remarkable growth in the church. In talking to the people in the UK when we did the series, there's growth in Europe and Eastern Europe in really surprising ways. That's not even to get into some of the massive growths in the other parts of the church. But if I can just make one other point about the whole church being seen as obsolete and a part of yesteryear, I get really annoyed every year. I yell at the television every year. every time, and it's the commercial stations and the ABC do this. They show it's Easter, so we show an Easter church service. And what church service do you see? A representation that is nowhere near what most people go to for church.
It's a very good point. All the gowns and robes kind of thing.
Some people get that, and some people like it, and God bless those who do it, and that's fantastic, but that is not the church. That's not the Church of Australia. So, unfortunately, our media actually give a kind of false view, because if I watched that, I'd go, well, that's obsolete.
I'm so shocked that you'd say that. Let me ask you this. Is this the first time that we're seeing a decline in the church?
Look, and obviously the answer to that is no, because you get this ebb and flow kind of within the church across the centuries. In fact, one of the quotes that we use in the episode on Towards Belief is G.K. Chesterton, who said, you know, five times the church has been said to go on to the dogs, and each time the dog died, which is wonderful statement. But listen to this piece where you talk to a Nicky Gumbel, and Nicky Gumbel opened up this whole world that I had no idea about, and it was what the church in England was like.
And Nicky Gumbel, for people who don't know, is the founder of the huge Alpha Course.
Yes, and he's now the rector of Holy Trinity Brompton, a massive church in London. But this is what he said about some of the ebb and flow of the church in the UK.
I'm really hopeful for the future of the church, because Jesus is alive, and Jesus is at work right across the world. If you take the UK, where some people think, oh, you know, the church has been in decline, and therefore they're predicting it's gone like this for the last 70 years. If it continues like this, by the year 2050, there will be minus 200 people in every church in the country, and so on. But this is nonsense. Now, this is not how statistics work. If you go back to 1740, the church in this country was in terminal decline. There were 6 people in St. Paul's Cathedral on Easter Day for communion. There were 10,000 prostitutes on the streets of London. And people said, you know, the country is in a terrible state. But it changed. It didn't carry on declining. Along came Wesley, Whitfield, along came Wilberforce, the abolition of slavery, the start of the Sunday school movement. By 1910, there were 5 million children in the Sunday schools, and it went like this. And I see lots of signs that the tide is turning, and the congregations are beginning to grow, young people are beginning to come into the church, there's a vibrancy in the church, 40,000 people in Wembley Stadium yesterday praying, Soul Survivor, Young People's Movement, 40,000 people over the summer. We're finding the church growing every Sunday here. 1,000 people turning up on the first night of Alpha. You know, there is lots of life in the UK.
Just to pick up, if you missed what Nicky Gumbel said then, just remind you of what he said. He said, if you go back to 1740 in the church in the UK, there were 6 people in St. Paul's Cathedral on Easter Day for communion. 6 people.
6. And London was still a pretty big place then.
Massive. Yeah. And you say, I heard that and I was just stunned. Yeah. But his whole point was, then there was Whitfield, then there was Wesley, then there was Wilberforce, and then the church, as it were, has regenerated under the work, not of organisation, but the Spirit of God. And that continues to happen across the centuries.
What are your thoughts on why the media portrays it as such? Because there is a bit of that dynamic. I mean, in some areas, the churches are closing down. For instance, in Adelaide, a lot of beautiful old inner city churches become restaurants, bars, cocktail bars.
And we actually open we introduce the series, the episode on the obsolete church standing in front of a Methodist church in West London that's now a bed shop. And like that happens all over the place. And yeah. And look, there is a kind of parting of the ways with some churches doing really well and strengthening and other churches failing badly. And so that is certainly the place of the West for us now. Look, I think the media tends to go for the classic image of, okay, we want to do church. What does everybody think of church? They think of old building, frankly, older men in long gowns. And so they show what they think people need to see. But I would, as all our listeners on Open House across Australia would know, Lee, I mean, that's not the church.
No.
And the church in the West is not continuing to fail. It's actually growing and regenerating, but there is enormous shift. Like in America, it's not that the church is kind of failing terribly, but certainly certain denominations who have taken a particular route are failing badly, and people are shifting and moving around quite a deal.
I think it's wise that you've been defining this as a Western thing so far. What's the experience outside the West of the Christian church?
Remarkable. I know we interview on the Obsolete Church episode Jossie Choco, who comes from Melbourne, and he's planting churches in India. Jossie, long story, you have to watch the episode. But Jossie's planted 9,000 churches in India and has 4,000 church planters working with him. A lady came to a clinic that his ministry runs. She found out about Jesus, came to faith in a remarkable way, went back to her village. They didn't hear of her. And then she kind of contacted them again. I'm not sure exactly how she contacted them. One of the workers and said, I've been talking to people here about Jesus. I think I should start a church. Can somebody help me? And he said, great, I'll turn up and I'll meet you at this place at this time, and you gather the people that you've been talking to. Now, your listeners and you, Lee, are not going to believe me, but this is true. So Jossie's worker turned up at this field, rice paddocks in a kind of out of the way part of India, and she gathered the people that she's been talking to, 25,000 people.
25,000.
Jossie in the interview said, yes, that continues to grow. And I was in that same field last year and spoke to 40,000 people. Yeah. So in India, you have remarkable growth. And Oz Guinness is just a great guy. And we interviewed him and he actually reflected on some of the growth you see in the church in different parts of the world that are non-Western world.
The church in the West is heavily in captivity to the culture. The church worldwide is exploding. You take, say, where I was born in China, nothing to do with me. It is the epicenter, North Central China, of the fastest growth of the Christian church in 2,000 years. So I'm an Anglican. In Nigeria, there are 20 million Anglican Christians. I mean, the church is exploding in sub-Saharan Africa. Now, it is true that much of the church in the West is in captivity to modern culture, and it does in many ways look shallow and vulgar and sick. But you remember that great line by G.K. Chesterton, five times the church has gone to the dogs, but each time it was the dog that died. In other words, Christians believe in renewal and revival and reformation. So the church looks in bad shape now, but it won't stay that way for long.
That's just a wonderful statement. And that guy is so gracious, so wonderful. Was born in China, grew up in China, travels the world, worked for the BBC, moved to America, and knows the world scene, and used that quote that I spoke on before about the fact that, you know, the church is going to go to the dogs. And yet each time the dog has died, and I actually think the dog's dying again. I think we're seeing regeneration in the church in really wonderful ways.
Oz Guinness is also in the current Open House book. So there you go. That's the obsolete church. Let's turn to this question of the step of faith, Carl. You interviewed more than 30 interesting, intelligent people from the US, UK, Australia and beyond. My guess is their journey of personal faith had lots of shades, lots of different shades.
And absolutely. And the last episode is actually called Towards Belief. And what we do in the last episode, which is probably a bit odd for an apologetics type series, is that we kind of connect together a whole bunch of these stories. So in other words, here you see how all of these different people came to faith. And one of the wonderful stories that we use in that was not only Erwin McManus, who was just stunning, really. It's just you've got to get the series and listen to his piece. But Michael Ramsden talked about the fact that he was in Cyprus. He went on top of Mount Olympus. I might have talked about this an earlier week. And he'd been talking to Christians for a long time, had no Christian background. His family was in the Middle East. And on the top of Mount Olympus, when he was smoking his way through 40 cigarettes, came to this point, Lee, said, this is true and I need to do it. And I need to become a Christian. But if I become a Christian, I will be miserable for the rest of my life. But I know it's going to make me miserable, but I need to make it because I believe it's true. So he walked to find a Christian to pray for faith, and he came across a group of his friends, one of which was his brother, and he said, listen, you need to know this. I'm going to go and find one of those Christians. I'm going to become a Christian, and I'll be happy for the rest of my life. I just want you to know. which flies in the face of the idea that people say you need a crutch.
And
you need to find some reason to make it, you know, important.
How does he say it's turned out for him if he was going to be so miserable?
I don't really ask because we both knew that wasn't the case.
Yeah,
and it was just this wonderful thing. But you've got to remember, it was C.S. Lewis who in Magdalen College in Oxford decided that God was God, and he prayed, didn't actually become a Christian at that point, became a theist, and he said he was the most reluctant and dejected convert in all of England.
Yes. Let me ask you this. Is a step of faith purely a process of searching for truth?
Well, it's interesting. I want to answer that in two ways, by saying, to remind everybody that's listening, that it is a search for truth. Because I think a lot of people actually believe in a postmodern age that these days it's searching for the thing that works for you, searching for the kind of worldview and the kind of values that sort of suit your lifestyle, you know, almost do-it-yourself faith, you know, add a bit of religion to kind of sort out your life, where it is a searching for a truth, where people are going, what is true? Now, that's a significant thing. But the other thing we need to know is, you know, people had quite remarkable experiences. And sometimes it was reading the Bible. Sometimes it was actually watching other people's lives come together. And in each of these things, it sort of brought them up short. And they had to think, so what is it that I believe? So while there's a sort of philosophical, intellectual grappling with an idea, There's the other side of it as well that still comes in, where God's at work.
There are also some who pursue it seeking to fill a void in their life, an emptiness.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the kind of existential experience that life is not working out the way you think is part of that process. I mean, one of the great stories is, if I go back to Oz again, Oz's wife, I've got to tell you, Lee, if I can just share this personally with you and all the listeners, and not to tell any of their friends, when he told this story we're about to hear, I nearly said, oh, you're making this up. Because you just imagine, here's this guy that's grown up in China, that's done all these remarkable stuff, And then he tells this story about his wife.
Well, I'm very privileged to have married a Vogue cover girl, but my wife came out of an atheistic background. There was no faith in her family at all. And she found herself at the age of 21 on the front cover of Vogue, engaged to a French baron who was 22 and a mega millionaire and the windsurf champion of the world with Rolls Royces in New York and Paris. But one day she was at a party with Salvador Dali, whom she knew, and the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, and all these sort of people. And Dali had chained to the table in the middle, on a golden chain, a pet cheetah. And it had been declawed and defanged, and it was on drugs like everyone else. And my wife looked at it, and she said, that's a caricature of what it's meant to be. And then she looked at everyone else, partygoers in France in the late 1960s, and she said, we too are caricatures, surely, of what we're meant to be. And she felt she was looking into an abyss. And she said to her fiancé, I'm going to search for the meaning of life. To cut a long story short, she came to faith in Christ and actually left that world and broke her engagement, I thank God. And we met a year later.
I'm with you. What a story.
I mean, a Salvador Dali party with
cheetah.
A cheetah. I mean, it's
on a gold chain.
Absolutely. And you can hear, as you listen, it's funny, I'm at the headphones and I'm listening to the interview and I can hear, we're in the Trout Inn, which is just beautiful. Nice. The Trout Inn was in Oxford, just on the edge of Oxford, and C.S. Lewis had two favourite haunts. One was the bird and the baby and, or the child or something in the middle of Oxford, and this was the Trout Inn. And so we're in one room and everybody's out having a lunch in the other room, as you can hear. But it was just a fabulous story.
Fantastic. What did you find out amongst all these very interesting and diverse people about what creates a search for faith? Is there anything that you can say about that?
Look, I think it's everything that the people are involved with. You know, like there are some people that there's just really special things. Amy Orr Ewing, who is now at Oxford, talked about the fact she was actually born in Australia. I didn't even know this till the interview. And her dad was teaching as a professor, I forget what in, at New South Wales Uni. A complete kind of atheist, agnostic, just working away, quite successful, having kids, you know, English in his background, but came out one day marking papers or doing something, preparing for lectures. He gets his vision of Jesus and he knows it's Jesus and just changes his life completely. His wife, you know, was apparently really angry for ages and took ages to come around. And that's her story of faith. Her story of faith is her dad's story of faith. And then you have guys like Vince Vital, who he says he's a Catholic from Brooklyn and went off to university. So because he's I think it was a Catholic from New Jersey or Brooklyn, you know, I think it was New Jersey, he's a Christian. Then he met people and he thought, who call themselves Christian, he said, well, they're quite different to me. So maybe I haven't quite got it worked out. And so then that started him in the process of going, so what is it that I believe? Erwin McManus, I mentioned earlier, just went to university, had this really eclectic background in his family, and started a search for faith, which was, well, what's true. And he actually says in the beginning of the interview, you'll see it in the last episode, he says, I remember the day that I considered Christianity as an option. And I laughed and put it aside because it was so ridiculous. And then he went through all these different worldviews and ended up back there believing in faith. Not because that was his family or anything, but he saw the person of Jesus. He recognized that this is not us working our way to God, but God reaching out to us. And that's where he placed his trust.
And not always believing what you hear on the media. Yes. And this is why this is such a good media thing, using the tools of today. Yep. It's towards belief. Just before we finish off, how can people access it? When and where and how is it to be released, Carl?
I've got to tell you, last week we finished the final cut on the 10th episode, and it's now in the sound suite and the colour grading, and it'll go to being reproduced at the end of this week.
Great stuff.
And so it'll be actually kind of in our hands by the last week of May, and we've got a launch event in St Philip's Anglican Church. If you're in Sydney, why don't you come along 7:30, 6th of June at St Philip's Anglican Church in York Street. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to release it that night and kind of launch it that night. But you can go to our website and pre-order it, which, you know, basically a couple of hundred people have already done. So that's towardsbelief.org.au, towardsbelief.org.au, or every good Christian Bookshop will have it by the end of the month.
And that link's going up tonight on our Open House Community Facebook page. I am sad that this has come to an end. This has been so much an Open House kind of series. Thank you so much for coming in each week. It's been an absolute treat.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been great. Thanks.
See you soon, mate.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.